wanting to talk about this subject for since we started this show almost 4 years ago, and that is the Buffalo River and what's going on with our wonderful river. And I don't know if anybody's seen this. I have a DVD that my friend Larry Foley did up at the University of Arkansas. You guys, I know you all have seen it. Gordon Watkins and Jack Stewart are with us. Gordon is from Parthon and Jack is from Irby. But we have one of the most wonderful treasures in the entire United States in the Buffalo River. And folks are doing about everything they can now to ruin it. Let's take off from there.
All right. Tell you what, Gordon, why don't you weigh in and just kind of fill us in on what's going on up there and what the issues are.
Sure, Brian. Yeah, so I've lived on Little Buffalo River, which is the largest tributary of the Buffalo since the early 70s. I farm up there, and I've got a tourism cabin rental business that I depend on tourism to bring my customers to me. And about 6 years ago, we were disturbed when we discovered that a 6,500 head hog operation had been allowed to be built on one of the larger tributaries of the Buffalo River, just a few miles upstream from Carver, actually, without any opportunity for public comment, no opportunity for people to weigh in, no notification of neighbors or any of the county authorities were not notified.
So how does that happen?
Well, it happens because it was the first and only permit of its kind ever issued by the state of Arkansas, and it's since been done away with because it was so controversial and because it didn't work. That's caused problems of its own.
Talk about the permit when you say that. What does that mean exactly?
So in order to operate a facility of this size and scope, and it's dealing with liquid waste, liquid swine waste, you can imagine how much waste 78,000 pigs a year can produce.
Well, how much is that exactly?
It's about 2.7 million gallons is what they're allowed to spread. And they take that waste, they keep it in ponds, and then they take that waste and spread it on fields that are adjacent to Big Creek.
Spread it by kind of like sprinklers type systems, don't they?
No, they spray it out of the back of big honey wagons, they call them. They're just trucks they drive across the fields, and they're calibrated to spray a given amount of waste per acre, depending on how fast they drive and how it's set up. So the point is that it's raw waste that's being spread in huge quantities on this very shallow soil. This isn't like the Arkansas Delta where you got 20 feet of topsoil and you're growing corn and soybeans. So crops that can use the nutrients in that waste.
What is your topsoil depth there?
It varies, but I've been farming there, digging lots of post holes, and you don't have to dig very deep before you hit either gravel or rock. So it's hard to set a post in places, but I'd say anywhere from inches to a couple of feet.
And then what's under that?
Well, you'll usually hit limestone of some sort, either gravel. You'll hit these gravel beds that are obviously very porous. Water can move through those, or waste, or whatever's contained in that water. You'll hit limestone that's very porous. It's got lots of pores and kind of like Swiss cheese, mm-hmm. and that all leads into the subsurface water, into the springs, into the groundwater, and then it comes back up in springs that emerge in the streams in that area. So our groundwater is very vulnerable.
So for people that aren't familiar, when people think rock, they think rock, but the rock in that part of the Ozarks is kind of like a sponge, isn't it?
Yeah, if you think of it as a sponge, it's got pores all through it, and that whatever is spread on the surface, if it leaches down and hits that limestone, it's going to move its way through it very quickly.
You folks are welcome to weigh in if you would like to. 1-800-477-1037. That is a statewide number and a local number. It's 433-1037. We're talking about the Buffalo River and the issues that are going on right now, a hot topic. You're welcome to join in. We are back in our Guadney Beer Gypsy Studios. We are visiting with Gordon Watkins and Jack Stewart, who are representing the Buffalo River Alliance. If you read the newspaper, follow the news or whatever, this has been going on for a good while now. How many years has this been? Going on 6 years. I'll just try to capsule it very quickly. There's a hog farm up on near the Buffalo River that a permit was granted. It is polluting the river, the ground, whatever. I'm just going, you know, if somebody said, are you taking sides? You bet I'm taking sides. I love the Buffalo River. We fish it. Last time we fished it, the moss was unlike any I've ever seen. And so somebody has to put a stop to it. And so basically, that's what we're talking about tonight.
Well, the river has changed. We were talking off the air. You know, I still do. I've got a practice that I drink from every stream that I float. I use a filter and fill an Nalgene bottle. And I guess it was about 5 years ago I quit doing that on the Buffalo, even though it's a good filter that filters out just about everything. I could not look at that water and feel like that it was a safe thing to partake of, and I quit. And it's changed the way the floating algae that's in there has changed the way that we have to fish it. I mean, you can look, your own eyes can see that there have been major, major changes to that watershed, both physically and, you know, hydrologically. And you guys lived there. Let's just continue the conversation.
Just to follow up on something Gordon was saying before the break, to give you an idea of the vulnerability of this river. First of all, it's a small channel of the watershed. 7% of the watershed is actually within the park. And the Park Service has identified 440 springs in that stretch of river and over 500 caves. So it gives you an idea. We were talking about this karst topography, the limestone. Gives you an idea of how porous it is and how something you do in one part of the watershed can show up somewhere else. We were talking during the break also about the dye tracing that's been done, and it's amazing. Well, you put this dye into the water, maybe in a well or near there, and then you have these little packets of charcoal, and you put them around at different places around the watershed, and you can tell where that dye is picked up by the charcoal. And that some of the places that it's been picked up on the other side of mountains, in one case, upstream of where it was on the surface placed. So it just shows you the complexity of what's happening underground there. The stream where I live, part of the year, a major section of it looks dry on the surface. But there's lots of water running underneath the ground.
And, you know, this isn't new territory. Back in 86, there was a landfill that was proposed for the Buffalo River watershed, and they did a test like that at Pendle, and showed very clearly dye running into the river, as I recall. So nobody can be surprised. I mean, the topography up there hasn't changed in millennia. So why are we not learning anything between then and now?
Yeah, that Pendle dye trace was what stopped that landfill from being built, was because they established a direct connection between that landfill and a spring in the Buffalo River. One of the springs, which is the same spring that this dye trace that Jack was talking about, the dye emerged there as well. And, you know, one thing to know is that the Buffalo River still is one of the most pristine streams in the state of Arkansas. And we want to see that it stays that way. But some of the most concerning news we've got just in recent weeks was the State Department of Environmental Quality released their biennial review of impaired streams. They have to, every 2 years, the state has to take a look at every stream, every lake, every river in the state, and score it according to its level of impairment or how it's being impacted, whether it be by temperature, dissolved oxygen, or pathogens, or a various number of criteria that they use. This year, a 14-mile stretch of the Buffalo National River was declared impaired. And the entirety of Big Creek, one of the largest tributaries of the Buffalo, was declared impaired. Those were the only streams in the Buffalo River watershed that achieved declared impaired status. And that's an alarming issue, because the 800-pound hog in the room is this hog farm. That's the biggest source of waste of pathogens. The nutrients in that waste cause algae blooms, as you were describing. When that algae dies, it takes up oxygen out of the water. So the fish and the crawfish and the food chain doesn't have enough oxygen to survive, and it has impacts down the river. We're seeing a 70-mile stretch of algae blooms in the Buffalo River this year. There was 20 miles last year. There's definitely some changes going on, and I'm not going to tell you that this hog farm is the sole source of the problem. It's not. There's a whole gamut of issues that we need to look at, but it's definitely one of the single largest sources of waste in that entire watershed.
a very concentrated source, I would say. What are some of the other, you alluded to some other things going on. What are some of the pressures besides that that are impacting the stream?
Well, we have tourists. Mm-hmm. Buffalo River had 1.7 million tourists in 2017. That's a significant source of usage. Now, some people want to say that that's the source of the pathogens in the river, so it's 1.7 million tourists that come there just to poop in the river, which obviously is not the case. But my answer to that is that the Buffalo National River, the National Park Service, has been monitoring the buffalo regularly since 1985. They've been monitoring their visitor numbers since the river was created. There's never been any correlation shown between the number of visitors and the levels of pathogens in the river. So those tourists, I'm sure, have impacts. There's, we all know about the leave no trace philosophy.
Well, that's a lot of lithium batteries in the bottom of the
and cameras and fishing gear right. And binoculars and everything else. So that's a source of impact. There's a couple of wastewater treatment plants in the watershed. There's one at Jasper. There's one at Marshall. The Park Service has one of its own that's been awarded recognition as being one of the most well managed in the state at Buffalo Point. So those are sources of potential impact. But the greatest source of impact, what Park Service says they see, is that it's the tributaries. As Jack said, the Buffalo River is this blue, imagine a blue ribbon running through the bottom of a valley, this narrow blue ribbon that takes up only 11% of the watershed. 89% of that watershed is outside the park boundaries. So what they're seeing is that those tributaries that feed that blue ribbon are what's impacting the river. That's where the pathogens are coming from. That's where the nutrients are being fed from all of that land outside the park that the park has no control over. So it's important, and that's part of the reason for this designation of impaired streams, because that is intended to drive the state to pay attention to those impaired sections of streams and do something about them.
All right, we've thrown some different percentages out here in different ways. Is there a way to show what percentage of that's coming from the hog farm?
That's a great question. There is technology out there that can tell you that E. coli, for example, which is a fecal bacteria that comes from your poop, it comes from people, it comes from animals. Any warm-blooded animal is going to produce E. coli from their digestive tracts. There is technology nowadays that can look at the DNA of that E. coli and tell you whether it came from an elk, if it came from a feral pig, if it came from a human, if it came from a chicken. It can tell you where it came from, but you've got to have the resources to do those kind of studies. Small volunteer organizations like ours, we do testing. We do some testing of our own, but we don't have the resources to do that level of testing. The state does. And we would encourage the state, now that they've determined those sections of the river watershed to be impaired, to use the best technology available to figure out where it's coming from and then take steps to correct it. And that's going to pinpoint the source of the problem.
As I understand it, when the original permit was awarded, we'll probably have to get back to this on the other side of the break, but when the original permit was awarded, there really weren't any no difference in the, it's kind of a one size fits all for soil type and the Delta versus the Ozarks versus the Ouachitas, and they did not differentiate between karst topography versus Delta topography. And has that changed, or is that still in place?
That was called the general permit.
Yeah.
And as I said, that permit, that hog farm got the first one of those permits, and it got the last one of those permits. And then the state did away with that program because they realized you might be able to do that with a gas station, you might be able to do that with a sewer plant, because they're built to very high technical standards. But when you're dealing with spreading raw waste, you're holding it in clay-lined ponds, for one thing, and then you're spreading that raw waste on the ground. Imagine there are numbers that compare the amount of waste a hog produces to a human, and it's anywhere from 4 to 6 times the amount. So imagine a city the size of Harrison, Arkansas, 12,000 people. Imagine if that town was taking the waste that they produce that goes to their sewage treatment plant, their tertiary sewage treatment plant. Imagine if they, instead of that sewer plant, they were just spreading it on the fields along Crooked Creek. Mm-hmm. That's the equivalence that we've got here. And so you can't apply those same general standards to hog farms.
You know what? We could talk about this probably for about 2 weeks. And let's take a short break. We'll continue our conversation.
Day morning, man, she woke up fighting mad.
All right, we are visiting with the folks from Buffalo River Alliance. We'll get them to define exactly what that is in a moment. Damon, we talked about the Horsewood Cup coming up this weekend. What are the fishermen going to face?
It's going to be challenging. We're going to have thunderstorms across the area. We've got a front. It'll help the fishing a little bit, but the thunderstorms are going to take away from it, I'm afraid. A heavy rain, hail, lightning, anything that you can throw out from a thunderstorm, be prepared for it this weekend, especially gusty winds. Highs near 90, lows near 72. Keep your rain gear handy. Have a way to get warnings, and keep it safe as you get out and try to enjoy it.
All right. Thanks, Weather Giant. Chuck in Arkadelphia. Go ahead, please.
Well, I'd like to weigh in on the Buffalo National River. Now, that's our first national river, right?
You got it.
Very first one.
That was created by an act of Congress?
1972. Yep. Signed by President Nixon.
Well, back in the 70s, we had a baseball team, softball team in Chicago, and some of the guys would go down there every year and float that. And they were just so, you know, they were gushing about it and how wonderful it was and the experience. And it appears to me that the reason that we have this river has been violated. It's better to take this waste and take it to the delta and dump it on 20 feet of soil. Why are they dumping it where they're spreading it? That needs to be stopped immediately. That's a no-brainer. And I think a judge ought to get involved, one that's not being paid behind the table. And it needs to be taken care of. It needs to be taken care of now. It needs get the help of our congressmen and our senators, and this is not rocket science. This is a no-brainer.
Chuck, you're making too much sense.
Listen, it's not hard in a situation like this.
No, it's not.
I just wish we'd do something about it. All you people out there, right, your congressmen, and I believe the owners up there, the stewards of the area, we got to do something about this, and yesterday would be a good time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chuck. Thank you for taking my call. Right.
You know, the river, the Buffalo National River, was kind of born of a, I mean, it's been threatened for its entire existence. And the reason we have it is because there were plans to dam it, put a dam up at Gilbert. Right, Gilbert?
That's right. Yeah, there are multiple dams. Actually.
And, you know, it's in the state that it's in now, the National River. It was made into that to keep that from happening, even though that plan, I believe, is still in place. The blueprints are still there, but it's not ever going to happen because of being a national river. But that was the first bullet that it dodged, and they just, you know, human development being what it is, encroachment, all the things that affect water. The Buffalo River is kind of the canary in the coal mine. I hate to be to use a cliche, but really that's what it is. You see that. Things that impact water quality, you know, manifest itself in other things around there. And there are groups like yours, the Buffalo River Watershed Alliance, God bless you, that are up there keeping track of things, keeping watch on things, but seems like you're overmatched sometimes, doesn't it?
Sure does. You know, sometimes people forget that if the Buffalo National River were not there, that whole area would be underwater.
That's right.
So it's not like a question of we want it to be the way it was. That was not one of the options. And we knew nothing about this happening. It was put in quietly. It was under construction, almost completed by the time we learned about it. The Park Service didn't know about it. And a group of people got together and were concerned about it. And it's really interesting the way it developed. It started with a website. And the people just gravitated to that website, and the talent that came around that was pretty amazing. And so we, part of that website, we set up a newsletter, and the subscribers just kept growing and growing and growing. We've got people from out of state who have, many people tell us that they visited, they remember when they were children coming here, their families bringing them here. So there's a lot of emotion and passion around this issue. We've got a board of seven people, but it goes way beyond that. The talent that people donate to this cause pretty amazing. We've got scientists, retired scientists. We've got a retired veterinarian who's very up on things. And, you know, he made a very interesting point that I think people need to understand when you talk about the tourists coming into the area and thinking that maybe that is the cause of some of the problems. And other people think it's the feral hogs. And the veterinarian made the really good point that what the hogs are eating, what they're consuming, is the food that's already there. And so when they excrete that, it's just part of the cycle. But what the hogs on a hog farm are eating is nutrients that were brought in from the outside. So the system there, the whole ecological system, is based on the nutrients that are available, and we're adding by bringing this hog feed in from the outside. We're adding pollutants.
Well, it's also
more than the system can handle.
It's also the concentration too.
Yeah. Right.
Whereas you might have a sounder of feral hogs that do what they do, and they can do considerable damage. You know, when Matthew and Laura did the entire buffalo, they reported feral hogs in the river at multiple locations, but not. How many of them are concentrated in that one spot? Not feral ones, but the domestic ones.
So, 6,500.
Yeah, you're not ever going to see 6,000 feral hogs in one spot. Yeah. So, you live there. You guys see the river every day, and you interact with it, and you interact with the people that live up there. What does the Buffalo River mean, the river and the National River? And I differentiate the two because they're two separate cultures. But what do they mean to the people and to the state of Arkansas?
People are very proud of it. We bought our land off of a local guy about 25 years ago, and he was so proud of that river. And I don't think people fully realize what it means to have a national river in our backyard. And if you look at almost anything that the state does to promote the state, there's a picture of the Buffalo River in it. It's the iconic thing that we've got. And even people who don't visit the river, they sort of need to know it's there. It represents part of what we as human beings need. You know, we need air, we need water, we need food, but we also need to know that the world is working as it always has, that somewhere there's clean water flowing and the birds are singing and that the forest you can walk in and that there are deer coming down to the streams to drink. So it's got an incredible psychological impact on people, even ones who just don't ever come here. They just know it's there. They have to know it's there. So that's why people put bird feeders in their backyards. They want that connection to nature. It's why they have pets. It's why so many people watch television programs about nature. But if suddenly those programs were all historical, that nature's all gone, it would have a serious impact on human beings.
Well, the other thing is that the National River is marketed nationally, brings people in nationally, and it's marketed as being one thing, that aura of purity and that aura of escapism and all. And then you get here and you see what's actually there. It's almost like advertising a 4-star hotel. When you get there, the carpet's torn up and the mattresses are full of bed bugs. You know, it's there's a disconnect, and that has to be reconciled.
All right, let's take a pause here on Ray Tucker's Arkansas Outdoors. We're coming to you live. We're visiting with the folks from Buffalo River Alliance, Watershed Alliance. Hot topic tonight, and we will continue that when we come back.
Some say we're the land of misfit toys.
We are back here at our Guadalupe View GMC studios, and we are visiting with Gordon Watkins, Jack Stewart from the Buffalo River Watershed Alliance, and we're talking about the damage that has been done to the Buffalo River, the economic, that's the wrong word.
Well, economic impact.
Economic and ecologically, the things that have gone on. Let's talk about the economics in the county, Newton County, that you all are in.
Yeah, Jack talked about the aesthetic value of the river, but it also has some real tangible value in it's an economic engine for some of the poorest parts of our state. Newton County, where Jack and I live, is 10th poorest county in the state. And the boom in our economy is tourism. There are rental cabins like mine popping up every month. There's more of them. And our organization, Buffalo River Watershed Alliance, has done a survey the last 2 years to try to count those and see how big that tourism business is. And you can look at the state's tourism taxes. Everybody in the tourism business has to pay 2% of their monthly income to the state to promote tourism. So that's a measure of how big our tourism economy is in our little county. And in 2017, our tourism businesses produced a gross revenue of over $6.5 million.
Now, that's 1 year?
That's in 1 year. That's in 2017. And of that, over $100,000 came directly to Newton County. And so in a poor county like ours, that's significant. That may not be much down here in Little Rock, but for where we are with 8,500 people in our entire county, that's a big plus, and that's all dependent on the Buffalo National River. That's the big attraction for Newton County in particular, and it also Buffalo also benefits multiple other counties that it runs through, four other counties and a couple of more that it touches on. So it's a big economic engine. The Buffalo National River estimated that their cumulative benefit to the local economy was over $71 million in 2017. So it's and it's being put at risk by one private business that's owned by a Brazilian firm that's using our watershed as a dumping ground and putting a budding economy at huge risk, and we don't think that's fair.
And one thing you pointed out earlier, Jack, that this is a bipartisan issue.
That's right. It's amazing how many people see this, whether they're Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever. They see this as an important icon of the state. And so our supporters come from all parts of the spectrum, the political spectrum.
Let's get your website out there and how people can get involved in different ways.
Yeah, I'm going to look this up because I always get it wrong when I... It's a Buffalo River Alliance. So you leave out the watershed part. So it's Buffalo River Alliance, all one word, .org.
.org.
Yeah, and we put out a monthly newsletter, and if you go on the website and there's a button there, you can click on it and sign up for the newsletter. Everything's free. We just want to get the word out and let people know.
Have a Facebook page.
Yeah, we have a Facebook page.
We have over 14,000 followers on a Facebook page and 2,000 supporters that get our newsletter. And that's, as Jack said, it's all free.
Is there any kind of other participation that would be helpful to you all that you're looking for that might help you out?
Well, we've got some events coming up. If at Compton Gardens in Bentonville on Friday, August 10th, there's a commemoration of Dr. Compton, who was instrumental in getting the Buffalo River saved. We're going to have an information table there, and it's all day long. It's from 9 to 7, all kinds of events. Everything's free. And then on Saturday, August 10th, there is and this is in Norfolk, Arkansas. And I don't know where Norfolk is.
So, it's by
Mountain Home.
Yeah,
Mountain
Home. I know it's got a brewery there, so it can't be over there. It's they're having an impaired water bodies discussion forum there, and that's done by the White River Waterkeeper. And then on August 17th, there's a public hearing on the draft impaired water bodies at ADQ headquarters in North Little Rock.
And I'd also point out that we're a totally voluntary organization. All of our board members are volunteers. All of the people who do work for us are doing as volunteers, and we're totally dependent on donations to carry out our work. We're a 501c3 tax-deductible organization, so we'd invite people, if they care about the buffalo, to donate to us, and we'll make sure it's put to good use.
That amazes me that people just send money. We don't ask them. I mean, there's a donate button on the website. There's a donate thing at the bottom of the newsletter, and people send money just because they care about this so much.
I mean, you all just recently had an event at Conway?
Yes,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I saw something. I thought, well, you know what? This is something we need to visit about. So
yeah, that was a great music event. Yeah.
Appreciate you guys coming in. We got about 15 seconds left here, I think. I know it was a long drive, and you drove down in the rain. And we will follow this with you all and pick back up and talk more about it if you'd like.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
All right. Folks, we have to save the Buffalo River, and not next month, not next year. We need to do it now. And so get involved with these guys. Give that website one more time real quick.
Sure. It's Buffalo River Alliance, all one word, .org.
Jack Stewart, Gordon Watkins, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Safe travels to you. Folks, we'll catch you again next week.
Gotta be patient. Yeah, I'm just one of those guys.